Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. And today we are doing our third episode of the three-part series that I had on child sex abuse and physical abuse and our child welfare system and how that relates to Pizzagate and all those type of things that can occur in our system because of the incompetence and the issues that our children are dealing with in the system. And we've had our first part, which was an overview of the entire child welfare system and what kids experience, how much abuse there really is, which is really high. Upwards of 40% of all children are reported to the child, our child system. Of the ones that are put in, well, first of all, most of them are filtered out, and that has dire consequences for a lot of kids. But the ones that end up in the system are the worst of the worst cases. And of those kids that are in the system, they're estimating that approximately half have been sexually abused. And once they're in the foster care system, they're three times as likely to be sexually abused in the system. So that points to a lot of issues. So my second part is with the FBI spokesman, Jeffrey Van Nest, and he comes on and he talks about what the FBI is currently doing to rid our country of child sex trafficking. And they have done a lot of arrests lately. They've arrested over 1,500 people. It isn't making the news nationwide, but they are making a huge difference, and they are investigating a lot of things. He wouldn't directly speak to Pizzagate-type activities, but he did directly talk to the fact that they are going after all levels of criminals. They are not shying away from the powerful. And he couldn't go into specific details on the investigations they're doing now because it would wreck these investigations. But he assured everyone that the powerful are going to be taken down if they are involved in this situation. And this episode is going to have documentary filmmaker Mari Frankel on, and her film Foster Shock, which is not in full release at this point, but you can see the trailer, which I am going to play a clip of the trailer here before I interview her. And it is a shocking expose of our foster care system. Knowing that children are three times as likely to be sexually abused in our foster care system, you can see why when you start digging into how inept and how incompetent our system really is and how we care for these children and how they are just pawns in a environment easy picking for sex trafficking, for child molesters. I don't know why our powers that be are allowing the rules and the procedures to keep going on like this with so many child victims. We can do a lot better, and I think you will agree. Let's play the clip of her trailer from the movie Foster Shock now.
Florida was the first state to fully privatize child welfare. When that happened, private companies sprung up across the state.
And these folks had very expensive CEOs and chief financial officers, a huge amount of expense created in overhead that never existed in the system before.
If you really go through it, it kind of feels like they're kidnapping you in the middle of the night. They're putting you in a home that you don't know anybody, and they isolate you from your family members, and you're alone.
Strip, what are you doing? I'm a little girl.
It's like incarceration with training wheels, basically, is what they're going through.
No, you deserve to grow up in this place right here, aging out of this place.
I'm telling you, we need to get out of there. This man raped me. And you tell me, stop imagining things that are not there.
All of us felt like we were criminals. We're being disciplined for something that our parents did.
Like a sign on the street, like an instinct within me, like a cloud.
You can hear the other episodes that I did before at my website at sarahwestall.com. You can hear them in podcast form, or you can hear them on YouTube. So now let's get into the interview with Mari Frankel.
Hi, Mari. Welcome to the program.
So nice to be here. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. You are an expert on what's going on in the foster care system. You've just recently put out a documentary called Foster Shock, right? That's the name of it. And it's really starting to gain steam, and people are getting a lot of information on it. Can you tell me a little bit about that film? And is it, I know it was filmed in Florida, but is it representative of what's going on across the country as well?
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about it. Foster Shock, it really examines what happens to children when they come into the foster care system. And it looks at privatization, which is really a new phenomenon. And we hear it, but I don't think a lot of us really understand it. I certainly didn't until I did the research on it for this movie, Foster Shock. I was a guardian ad litem. I still am, and which is like a CASA in some states. I've been doing it for 7 years. And my very first case was a horrific case. It was a little 12-year-old boy who had been in a therapeutic foster home for 2.5 years where he was being sexually abused. Within the second day that I had the case, I met with the little boy and his therapist. And the little boy at that point told his therapist, in only words a developmentally challenged child could tell somebody, that he was being sexually abused. At the end of the conversation, I was ready to leave. I mean, the therapist started to leave, and I said, wait a minute, what should we do? We have to call in an abuse report. He said, well, he's really a compulsive liar, and you can go ahead and call it in if you want to, but I don't believe him, and let me know what happened. So I called the report in. That night, we did get the kid out of that house, but the very next week, they put another young boy into that house, and he was sexually abused that very first night. I've never done a documentary. I've had no experience doing this, but every single case I've had in the last 7 years has been horribly, I mean, you can't find a word to describe it. Just horrendous things have happened to these children, and I don't think people really understand what's going on. So that's why I went in. That's how I started doing the movie. And that was the beginning of Foster Shock.
So what happened to the little boy? Did they take him out and not give more children to this person?
They took the little boy out. He ended up in a 30-day shelter. Emergency shelter where he stayed for over a year. He never got the help that he needed. His needs were never met. And then on the other side, they never closed the house down. And the very next week, they put another child in that house.
So there's been three. I mean, there's
No, after there was this kid that was raped, they still never closed the house down, and they brought out of county kids into that house for a week on a respite. It's when a foster parent takes a vacation. And I don't know what happened to those children, but the home was finally closed down, but it was a year and a half later.
So there was a year and a half worth of kids being raped, and they knew it. They were taking kids out, and they just put them in there anyways.
Yes, and a matter of fact, one of the boys that was in the house at the same time my little boy was in the house was accused of raping my little boy, and he was taken out and Baker acted, which is in Florida, which is put into a psychiatric hospital and held for 72 hours, and I don't know what happened to him. But apparently this young 24-year-old that was in the house doing these horrific acts to the children were also making them have sex with each other. No one was ever held accountable. No one was ever fired. No one was even ever reprimanded for what happened.
Wow. Okay. Well, sources state that children are three times as likely to be victims of sexual abuse in the foster care system. Is that what you have found?
I think it's much higher.
You think
I think it's much higher. I've never had a case where anyone's ever been charged with rape, even though a child is raped and everybody knows it. So the statistics are completely wrong, because unless you're charged, you don't know what the statistic is.
Wow. And they're not tracking it.
They're not tracking it. They're not tracking a million things that they should be tracking.
Jeez. Oh, so who is conducting the abuse? The foster parent, or is a lot of it sex trafficking, or what is it?
I'm sorry, who is conducting what?
Who's conducting the sexual abuse? Is it the foster parent? Is it other people in the home? Is it kids being put into trafficking situations?
It's all of those, and it's child-on-child sexual abuse, because a lot of the children have been brought into the system because they've been sexually abused. And so those children act out, and the way they do it, they act out on other children. So you have children, if you don't have like a really appropriate, loving, caring, involved setting where these children are really getting help, these children are acting, and most of these kids are not. The children act out, so.
Well, they're sexualized, right? And so that's what they've learned, and so that's what they know, and then that's what they do.
Right, and at a very young age, too. So you have to protect these children from the other children, and you have to get the children that have been sexually abused the appropriate wraparound service help that they need in a loving, caring setting.
And how many of those kids get that?
I haven't found any that get it.
Unless they get lucky and there happens to be some rare good foster parent.
Right. And I've heard that there's great foster parents out there. Well, I've worked with adequate foster parents, but most of the foster parents I've worked with have not been that great.
Well, in your film, there was a story, which what you said earlier, of a child that was pulled from a house and then only to have another person put. And in your film, it was a young girl that was put into the home and this older man raped her. What happens in general? Is there any process for dealing with those kinds of situations, or do they just are blind to it? I mean, is there anything formally that they do?
Well, they have, if the child abuse hotline is called, then Child Protective Services will go into the home and they will conduct interviews. But most of the time, they say that the child was lying, the child was fantasizing, the child's not happy, the child's acting out, that it really didn't happen. And as you could see in my movie, every single case I presented, the same things were said, that the child was not believed. That's why in my movie, I made sure that every single thing those kids said, I backed up 150%. So one interview I had with this young woman, Angel, who has aged out of the system, when she was 13 years old, she was put into a psychiatric hospital in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And she told me that they were putting drugs in yogurt and making her eat it in 2 minutes. And if she didn't eat it all, she would get restrained face down on a board and have a shot in her butt. And she would wake up eight hours later in a restraining, in an isolated room. And I was like, wow. So when we left that interview, I talked to my editor, incredible guy, my best brother ever. And cameraman. And I said, hey, Brian, I don't think we could back this up. How could we ever back something like this up? And he said, well, let's just go shoot her in front of the hospital. And if we can't use it, we can't use it. I said, okay. So I just Googled the name of the hospital and up pops an article. Now, this girl had been in this hospital 7 years earlier. And I Googled this article, Googled the address, and an article popped up from 6 months prior to when I a few months earlier, that said the exact same thing.
From another child?
No, from what happened was there was a riot at this hospital with the young kids. It couldn't have been that bad, really. And well, the police came, and the police ended up punching this 14-year-old girl in the face and then taking her to prison, taking her down to the station, and then accusing her of police, you know, violence against a policeman. And so this great writer for this magazine came in and he wanted to do a story on it. Well, what he found out was that the public defender's office got involved, and the public defender also went into this because he was going to defend this young woman for violence against a policeman. Well, they went in and did all this. They went into the facility to look around, and they told me, both of them, they're both in the movie, and they both said the exact same thing, exact, that this young girl told me, that who was there 7 years ago, that the kids were being restrained face down, given shots in their rear ends, and they even added the name booty juice. That's what the kids called it because it was such a regular thing. Now, booty juice is not just at this one hospital. Booty juice is used all over the state of Florida in all these institutions, and I would say, you know, pretty much all over the United States. And
so why are they doing that? Just because it's easy? Same reason they're giving psychiatric drugs to 1- and 2-year-olds?
These hospitals, okay, in this case, it's Citrus Health. Citrus Health gets millions of dollars of funding a year. Their CEO makes over $500,000 a year. Their COO makes over $400,000 a year. And the top five doctors, psychiatrists in their hospital, make anywhere between $200,000 and $350,000 a year. But you know what they do? They hire minimum wage employees to watch these kids, and they don't train them. So when the ACA report, which is the American Health Association, because I also have their report about what happened in the movie, when their report came out, it stated time and time again that there was no experience involved, no training involved, and how, you know, so people, they're just kind of willy-nilly doing it.
Jeez. They're just mindless. And the people who are supposed to be watching over them and coming up with procedures and processes are not doing their job. They're lazy, no, or whatever they're doing.
No one is held accountable. And once again, in this case and all the other cases that were documented just in that one ACA report that I read, no one was held accountable. No one was ever reprimanded, and no one lost their job. And they're still making hundreds and thousands of dollars a year. And these kids are treated, it would be a nightmare. It makes One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest look like, oh yeah, let's go there.
Jeez. Okay, well, you had some other things that I was just absolutely shocked over in the movie. There were a multitude of issues with the foster group homes. And one of the things that was really disturbing is these kids didn't have any money and a lot of times didn't have food. And so they were prostituting themselves just to have money for food. Now, is that something that you have seen on a regular, is that common? And what is occurring that's causing this to happen?
You know, I wouldn't say that the group homes, it's the whole thing. I've got a lot going through my mind right now, so I'm sorry. But I would say that basically the group homes, they say they put the worst kids in the group homes, okay? Just a statistic that I thought you might want to hear, and this is a national statistic. There's over 60,000 children in the United States that are in foster care that are living in group homes or institutions today. That's a lot. Now, these kids, most of these group homes are privatized, which means a lot of them are for profit. And even the nonprofit ones still seem to have very high salaries, but don't pay more than $11 an hour or minimum wage, which is like you pay a babysitter more than you pay these people. You know, like you pay a babysitter more money to watch your children for the night than they pay these kids that are in there that have serious, serious emotional needs that are not being met. They're away from their families. They've been sexually abused, physically abused, completely neglected. And they've got illiterate, most of the time, staff members that are rotating every 8 hours that come in and watch these kids. And the kids don't get what they need, and they end up, they're a very easy target for the sex traffickers. They don't have any connections in their life. These places are in bad areas where there's nothing, you know, they shouldn't even go out. But they have to go out. So they go out and walk around, and they get picked up by these guys.
And then what happens? Do a lot of these kids just go missing? Are missing?
I don't have stats on that, but I have a lot of concerns about it, because there's a lot of runaways. And when a child runs away, after a certain time, they'll just take you off the case, or take the case manager off the case. And I don't think anything's ever resolved.
How long of a time?
Well, I had one young girl, Jessica. She won't mind if I say her name. She's 18 now, and she's great, and she's adopted. But she was in a group home, and she ran away. And finally, I would find her, and then she'd run away again. I'd find her, and she'd run away again, because she didn't want to be in foster care. She was just embarrassed by it. She just couldn't function thinking of herself without a family. And I think after like 6 months, one time when I couldn't find her, they called my case manager called me and told me that they were going to take me off her case because she was a runaway for too long. And I said, you do not take me off her case. I don't care if it's years. You know, I'm still going to look for her. But if she comes back into the system, I want to know about it.
Jesus. So how often do these kids, you don't know, they don't track it, do they? You don't have stats on this.
They don't. I tried to find them out. I do know there's a lot of, I was just looking up, but it's really hard to know if the stats are right or not. But I think there's I really couldn't say, because I don't really trust the stats on the whole thing.
But do they try to collect it and have it, or do they not even? Because I know with my, you know, the first interview we did with Mike Tikkanen, one of the things that is a problem that he's found, and he's written an article, multiple articles on this topic, but and it's up there on my webpage, that the transparency, people are covering up for the system's not transparent, and he hates blaming the people that are in the system trying to do the best they can, but people cover up for the system because they don't want to shine a light on what's going on. So I imagine that's what's going on here with this issue, is nobody wants to shine a light on the fact that children go missing.
You know, I mean, that what you just said is very important, because I can tell you for a fact that people are willing behind closed doors to tell you what's going on, but they don't want anything to do with coming out into the public and actually saying what's happening, because everyone's afraid of losing their funding.
And that makes sense.
So they're afraid if they tell the truth, if they say, okay, these, you know, and make a public statement about it, that they're going to lose their funding. And I'm telling you, it's a real fear, but that bothers me, because these children should be coming first. And the way I look at it is this. Look, I'm part of the system, even though I'm just a volunteer. But what made me want to take it a step further is that I'm just as much a part of the abuse as everybody else. And until we all accept the fact that we are all a part of this abuse. So when we walk home, when I leave a kid in a home that they shouldn't be at, but I feel like my hands are tied because they are legally and can't pull that child out of there, I'm still leaving them there. And there's nobody that I can talk to that can make it any better for me, you know, most of the time. You know, most of the placements are completely inadequate. Children are being sent out of county. I mean, I'd say I live in Palm Beach County, and I'd say a lot of the older kids, I don't know the percentages, but probably more of them are out of county than in county, and which is weird because we have kids from out of county in our county. So once that child's out of county, all the risk factors go up because they don't have a case manager. Their case is still in our county, but they could be 8 hours away.
So you can't watch over them. Now they aren't.
There's no way.
And so why are all these kids crossing counties?
Well, exactly. That's because they say we don't have adequate housing. But to me, it's so easy. I mean, look at, we know how many, all you can do, put some numbers in a machine. How many kids have we had in the system every year? Inflation rates, economic, you know, things, different kinds of elements that go into, you know, coming out with a number that we think we're going to have in the system this year. How many of those kids are going to be with relatives? How many are going to be non-relative placements in foster homes? How many are going to need special, you know, care? And then we make sure that we'll know exactly what we need, and then we make sure we have it. I mean, it's,
well, yeah,
it's every just time a child comes in care, people act like it's never happened before. I mean, placements, like, oh, where should we place them? Kid sits in placement sometimes for hours all alone until they decide where they're going to put him.
Well, there's just not much money in it. So people who don't invest their time, it's just sad. Okay, so whatever, getting back to your Jessica girl, where was she for 6 months or over 6 months?
She actually is, she actually was living at a friend's house from school.
Well, at least that was someplace safe.
She was smart. She's no dummy. You know, she felt like that would be better, but I mean, she's one of my very few success stories. She's doing great.
Oh, she was a fighter. Actually, maybe that's why.
Yeah. I mean, this girl had never gone to school, literally in her life. And she's going to be graduating from high school this May. And she's looking at colleges right now.
Good for her. What a great story. Good for you for sticking with her. Okay. Well, let's talk about another shocking thing that I saw in the film. Was the treatment of very young children when they had emotional flare-ups or there was fighting between kids. Instead of a professional working through the issues, which we know why, because they weren't equipped, they would simply call the police. And the police would come in, and then you talked about the process. Can you share with us what happens? And first of all, how prevalent is that? And then what do they do to these kids when the police start coming in?
Well, it's funny because a few years ago I had a case where a girl was in a group home, and every time I would call her at night, the police were there, they're screaming and there was yelling. I was so upset one day, I went to the police department and I said, I'd like a police report of every time you guys have been here in the last year. And the police said, oh my gosh, that's going to take us a long time. Maybe we could just give you why, the reasons and how many times. I said, that's fine. That's okay. They were in that group home. They were out to that group home over 700 times in 1 year.
That's why they were like, oh, really? You want that? So then why?
Because once again, you have untrained, low-paid staff that's working in these facilities. And they can't. So something that even like my, if it was my, I thought, gosh, if it was my children, the police would be there every night, 100 times a day. You know, like every time your kid acts out, if you don't know how to
step in
and, you know, de-escalate a situation.
My dad always says you weren't a real parent if you only had one kid because you have to spend so much of your time just dealing with the fighting.
Right.
I mean, it was a funny thing, you know, in this context, it's not, but. So, right.
So the police are called and then the police come out and it just gets escalates. And a lot of the times the kids end up getting Baker acted.
What is that?
That's when the police, they will escort them to a psychiatric facility and hold them for 72 hours.
Well, there was another situation where they have to be strip searched and they were doing that to really young girls. And looking inside their private parts and all that, you know, I was shocked to hear that this little young girl is having this emotional flare up like my daughter had every other day. And yet the police came and strip searched her.
Yeah, they strip search all the kids. So you're talking about children that have been sexually abused that now get Baker acted. Because they're put into a situation, into a horrible situation that where nobody can really attach to them and love them and, you know, calm them down. And the minute they get to the psychiatric hospital, they get strip searched.
And
most of these children, once you're Baker Acted, you're probably, I don't know the statistics, because once again, I was trying to find out how many foster kids were Baker Acted. I just know from my own experience, and that's a lot. And I've known girls that have been Baker Acted 5 or 6 times, boys that have been Baker Acted 15 to 20 times. And every time that Baker Act ends, they just go back to this. They either go back to the same place or.
Well, what do they
do? Case manager picks them up and takes them someplace else. There's no continued care after that.
So what do they do for 72 hours in a psychiatric ward? Just sit there?
They basically sit there. They have group therapy. They're in their room a lot.
So they're trying to do something. They're doing some group.
I think they're trying to do something, but there's no continuum for when they leave. And a lot of times they put them on they get them on the psychotropic medication, which I'm one of those people that sometimes you need it and most of the time you don't. Okay. So I'm not anti it and I'm not pro it, but I think you have to have somebody that really cares and is very careful and is going to follow up with you. So you see this one person at the psychiatric hospital who might put you on something, and then it might take your case manager another few months to get you in to see another psychiatrist. And they don't, you know, it's just, there's no routine with it. It's just disrupted all the time. These kids live nothing but a disrupted life. There's nobody in their life that's consistent. Their therapists are not consistent. Their case managers are not consistent. Their homes are not consistent. Nothing's consistent. And that it's devastating. I mean, it's just so devastating, the effects it has on them.
Well, I could see why they would run away, right? I mean, it's just such a horrifying situation. And have you had experiences where you know of the kid that's gotten caught up in the sex trafficking and what actually occurs to them when they're in that situation? And do they ever get out?
Yes, I've had, I just had a case, you know, that the girl was involved in the sex trafficking. She had been she'd been Baker Acted 6 or 7 times. One of the times she was Baker Acted, she was up in Orlando in a group home. Now, the Baker Act 72 hours, and she was supposed to get out Friday night. But the house that she was living in, the group home said, oh, we don't want her back, so we're not going to pick her up. And her case manager was in West Palm Beach and said, I'm not going up there tonight. I'm too tired. So the hospital's calling me. Now, I don't have the authority to. If I did, I would have run up. I would have driven, you know, 2.5 hours. And gone and signed her out. But I didn't have the authority to do that. So she had to stay in that place for 3 more days. So then she went to a therapeutic group home in another part of Florida where she was still trafficking herself, you know, having sex with people, trafficking herself out. She finally ended up in a home on the other side of the state, somewhere near Tampa, where it was a home for sexually trafficked young women. And she's not doing well. She aged out and recently, and I don't believe she's doing well.
She's just struggling because she's never gotten the help that she needs.
That she needs. Mm-hmm.
I remember in the film, there was a girl that you were interviewing that said that the girls would go across the street and they would prostitute themselves so that they could earn your phone, so they could earn some money just for food and be able to have a little freedom. Is that something that I know in this particular case that girl was doing, but have you seen that regularly? I mean, is that something that they typically do just because it buys them a little bit more they have money that is theirs that they can use?
You know, I think that is true. I think it's more in the cases that I've, like, it's so funny because the girl in that, in the movie who was going to the, that hotel across the street, I had another girl in that group home, and I know she was sexually trafficking her. I know she was, you know, trafficking herself out. And I know there was a 14-year-old girl in that home that was on runaway status, and she had been sexually trafficking herself out. And I was looking for her, and I was thinking, where in the heck are these kids going? What hotel is that? I had never even saw the hotel across the street. I went up and down the roads looking, you know, just to see, like, where would they go? And just, you know, just trying to see if I saw something. And when I did the movie and the girl said, oh, we went to the hotel across the street, I was like, what the heck? Are you freaking kidding me? I couldn't believe it because that's where they were going. But I think it's just mostly that they're just lonely, that they want that connection, and that they're bored.
Well, one of the things that I've heard with kids that can get into some of these trafficking trades is that it can get really gruesome, that these kids can be forced to have sex 20 times a day, every day. And it's just a very violent situation that they get themselves into. Have you seen any of that? And is there anything that is formally done to try to get rid of these these trafficking gangs?
You know what? I personally have not had any one-on-one experience with any of the kids that I've overseen, you know, getting beat up to that point. But Seal of Freedom is an agency for kids that have been sex trafficked. They actually provide housing. And, you know, it's interesting because they have all the statistics, but they can't really talking to Elizabeth Fisher, who's the CEO there, they can't really get these kids at younger than 18. And most of the young women that come into their homes and really want to change their lives are really in their 20s.
So they don't get the young kids. So they don't know who gets those young kids and what happens to them.
Nobody, because this is the problem. The kids cannot be locked up unless they're in JDD or DJJ, a little ADD or dyslexic, whatever, DJJ. I'm always like JDD. But so if you have a bunch of girls that are being sex trafficked and they don't necessarily want help because they're in like a real, you know, I'm going to do my own thing, you know, stage. And you can't, it's hard to keep them there. You know, they're going to be like, screw you and leave. So it's not until they get to, so they're really being victimized through all that extra time. I mean, unless I really believe that you've got to have, if you had a place that was, that had, you know, all the services, that had a beautiful place to live, you know, skills that you could build it for these kids to do jobs. I mean, we don't do anything for these kids to actually give them any skill building, you know, for when they, or even if they could get a job, even if they get a job, they can't keep it because they need to be driven and the staff member may not be able to drive them.
Well, another point in the film is you had a coverage of a really great foster parent who turned around a troubled child just by showing love and care, and that really was what the kid needed. And just, you could, the blossoming of her that came out. But the disturbing element was how the system essentially pushed her out of the system because they were making so many demands on her. And so the part of the film was talking about how it's really difficult to keep good people as foster parents. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's hard for two reasons. Number one, in the one case that you were talking about, this woman was a therapeutic foster mother. And what happened was, is that when this girl, if you're a therapeutic foster parent, but you have to have therapy needs. But once, if you're in a loving, caring home, that's therapy. And so you're going to you know, be a happier, better kid. And then you don't need that home anymore and they're going to send her away. So like that one young woman, they were going to send away and she had to take less money because she decided she wouldn't be a therapeutic foster home anymore. But in her case, you know, she's a big family woman and she has family from everywhere and she wants them to come and stay with her and wants to treat the kids like, you know, regular family. Well, you're not allowed to do that.
Why?
That's how it should be.
Why are they not allowed to be treated like they're just part of the family when they're living there?
Because everybody that comes in, they say they have to protect these kids, which is like an oxymoron, right? So they say that everyone that comes into the house has to be fingerprinted. You can't have more than one person per bedroom. You can't have the boys with the girls, you know, you can't just all sleep on the couch and, you know, watch TV.
So they're doing that because there are so many problems. So they're putting these rules in place to try to alleviate all the sex abuse, but then they're not really anyways, because they're putting kids back in this homes that are being sexually abused.
Right. Right. And then the other example of Andrea, who adopted those two little boys. They were both on the autistic, the two brothers. Mm-hmm. She was an excellent foster parent and she is hysterical. She's like, there's no effing way I'll ever be a foster parent again. Do you know what they put me through? They put me through a hell. And because she wanted all the services and all the best things for those boys. And so every time she would call the case manager, you know, they're like, oh, well, we've got 100 other cases that are worse. So they're like, these kids I know are safe and in a good home, but she's going to push to get the child's needs met as a foster parent. And every time she does that, she gets pushback. And a lot of times these really good foster parents, they end up kicking them out of the system before they're going to kick the rapists out of this, you know, the really bad foster parents out of the system.
Because they're a pain in the butt, always calling up and saying and demanding that these kids get what they deserve. Right. And or nobody like, wants those kind of people around.
Right. They're not going to take their child out of school, you know, for something else when they shouldn't. Like the kid needs to stay in school. We're not going to do that. Well, too bad. You know, so it's
because they're being good parents. Well, I had a friend who had a 7-year-old who was still in diapers, couldn't eat, you know, with fork and knife. And she got him out of diapers and he could eat and started creating a normal life. And she was talking about the process, how it was just such a pain in the butt, how she had to change out a window and all these like piddly things she had to do. But then after 6 months of working with this child, they ended up putting the child back in the mother's home. And she said that she was so distraught by that process that she will never do it again because the mother was so incompetent. So I don't know if you've seen stuff like that, but that really bothered her a lot.
Yeah, I interviewed a woman. She's not in the movie, but she was actually was her husband, and he was telling me his wife is a doctor in the emergency room, and they brought in a baby with like 21 broken bones in its body, and the baby was in the hospital for a very long time, and she was taking care of it, and they finally said, is there any way that you would consider fostering this baby? Because the medical care that this child's going to need is so extensive. And you know the child now and you know her needs. You've been her doctor. And so they agreed to take this child into their home. Well, when the child was about a year and a half, the mother was back in the picture and wanted visitation with the child. And oh my gosh. I mean, it was just horrible. The child didn't want to see her mother and they would have different people pick up the child, take her to the visits, and she'll never do it again. It was a horrible experience.
Sort of what ended up ultimately happening to this child? Did she end up going back with the mother?
She ended up going back with the father. The father, I don't know the exact specifics of the case. So I don't really, you know, but I do believe that the mother is the one that hurt the child. She was still pending arraignment, or I don't know, at the point where she was having been, and they still hadn't gone to trial her case when she was doing the visitations. And And the father was apparently in jail at the time, but then they wanted the child back. And it disrupted their whole family because they had another daughter and it became like her sister. And the whole thing just, I think it was completely devastating for the family.
So what ultimately happens to the children in the system? Like, let's say an 8-year-old goes into the system. What is likely to happen when that child is 18? You know, what is the normal process usually?
Well, in Florida, they've extended foster care to, I think, 21 or 22. But what happens still, it's kind of a false pretense, I believe, because when a child is in a foster home or a group home, the day they turn 18, they're moved out of those homes and put into transitional housing.
And what is that, like a halfway house?
No, not even a halfway house. It could just be an apartment somewhere. I mean, really. Their own apartment, which is horrible. I mean, number one, the kids are, most of the children that turn 18 aren't even seniors in high school. They're only like juniors in high school. And even if they're seniors, like I have a child that's going to be aging out in April. And I'm trying to get her to stay. I'm trying to push to allow her to stay in that group home to finish off her, you know, the end of the school year. Because if not, she's going to get moved to an apartment. It could, we don't even know. They never know really until the day they leave or the week before they leave. Somewhere in Palm Beach County, it might not be near her school. So she might end up missing the rest of, you know, the school year because she'd have to take two buses to get, and a lot of times they do, they take a bus to get to their new school because they don't have the transportation and everything else that they need to get there, and they feel extremely lonely. It's so depressing.
So they put them in a lot of times they'll put them in housing that's not in the same school district that they've been in, and so now they no longer have a means to get to school. I mean, how often does that happen?
Oh my gosh, all the time. So I know this girl, her mother just moved to Mississippi, and she said, the day I turn 18, I'm moving to Mississippi, because she's terrified to live alone. There was a boy in my movie, he has a red kind of sweatshirt on that he actually designed himself. He's a really cool guy. But he said he was abandoned by, his mother went to jail, he and his brothers down to Florida, ended up in jail. Their grandmother came down from Georgia to take them back up to Georgia, but he was like 7 or 8 years old and he was on his way to school. He loved his school. His grandma, he didn't get what's going on really. And his grandmother said, we're packing up. We're going back to Georgia. And he said, oh no, I'm going to school. And she said, well, go ahead. But if you go to school, when you come home, no one's going to be here. So he goes to school. When he came home, they had left. He ends up in the system. He ends up in a group
home.
How old
was he at that time?
I think 8 or 9.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So imagine the abandonment issues that this young man has now. Well, he goes into a group home.
Did his mother, before you get into it, did his mother ever come back for him, or she was gone? That was it.
She was gone. That was it. I know that he has recently reconnected with his mother, but I don't know how that's going.
Okay.
But he ended up in a group home, which he thought was a great group home. And because the woman in the, you know, the mother or whatever in the group home would like fold his clothes, and they always had a nice dinner. He was so excited about it. And then when he turned 18, he was really excited. He thought, oh, everything's going to be great. And I'm going to be 18. They're going to give me like a nice dinner. Well, during the day, his case manager came in with a garbage bag to pack all his clothes, moved him to an area, you know, a few miles away where he had to take a bus to get back to school. He's all alone now. He's not even allowed to go visit your group home again. You know, you can't go there and hang out after you turn 18. You're done. You have to leave. So now those connections you've had there for years and years, they're gone. So now he's all alone. He's dying of depression, he said. He's taking a bus every day, doesn't even know how he's making it through school. He finally graduates which is like a freaking miracle. And he takes his bus to go to graduation. He, by the way, he invites his case managers. He invites his mother, all the people that he knew. Not one person came to his graduation.
Oh. Did you?
He said.
Did he you said, go or did you know him?
I didn't know him then. I was. This is one of the kids in the movie that I was interviewing. Oh,
you would have gave him a big hug and you would have went.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Oh, okay.
Like, I die to do so. I love doing stuff like that. That's like, to me, that's the coolest thing.
Oh.
And even if I couldn't go for some weird reason, I would have had a whole contingent there just screaming for him and taking him out to dinner after.
With all, right? With all the listeners, we would have had like 5,000 people at his graduation.
Right. Yeah.
I know. Oh, poor guy. Okay, so now he didn't have anybody. And did he have any really good friends in school?
No, because they get moved around so much. Mm-hmm. These kids, there's one of the guys in the movie. He is the coolest guy, Ernest. Ernest is now at Howard Law School. He just got a scholarship.
Good for him.
I called Ernest. You know, I haven't talked to him in like a month or so, but I talked to him a couple times at the beginning of the school year to see how he was doing. And he was, you know, because it always cracked me up because he's going from, you know, this Florida kid down up to Washington. And he got a job as a waiter at Georgetown restaurant. You know, and I'm just like, good, how are you doing? But he hasn't. I said, have you met some friends? Like, no, I haven't met anybody. They don't know how to connect.
They're afraid, aren't they? Are they afraid?
I'm hoping that he's made some connections since but he was in a good program, and this is what I want to say. Like, there's a program in Broward County called Handy, and it's for foster kids, and they bring all these kids to this program after school, and the kids can go there as long as they want. And Ernest and another kid in the movie, Breon, they were still going back to help kids when I was interviewing both of them. And that's the only, they felt so connected there. And those are the only kids that had any feeling of, that I got the sense that had any feeling that they had real deep connections. And Breon, who was in the movie, he said it's the only time he got to see his brothers was because they would go to the aftercare too, because they were all separated.
Mm-hmm. So there are some really good programs and good people that are really trying to make the system better. Based on your experience, what should be done to make it better? I mean, I know there's a ton of things, but what are the heavy hitters?
To me, there's one thing, period, and that's accountability. If you're the head of a CBC, or you're the head of, you know, you're rolling out these programs, you better be competent, caring, compassionate, loving person that wants the best for these children and is willing and is smart enough to know how to create the environment that can give them the needs that they need to have to be successful.
It's not something to go into if you just want to make a buck. You go into this if you really care about children.
Right. And until we hold these people accountable, and until we had measurable, you know, we have measured success in all these different areas, nothing's going to change.
Okay. So how can people see your movie? Where is it available?
Right now it's not, but I'm going to make it available very soon online, or they could just email me at Mary, M-A-R-I, at fostershock.com, and I'll send them the link.
Okay. Is it going to be free? It's a very well-done movie. It's very well done. So maybe it can get up on YouTube and people can start passing this thing around, because I think it's really good and the words needs to get out there.
I just need to figure out how to get it up on YouTube. But can I just run off 3 or 4 statistics really that I think are pretty eye-opening?
Yes.
So 50% of all these kids, foster kids, do not complete high school. 95% do not get a college degree. Over 50% are unemployed by the time they're 24. Over 60% percent will depend on government assistance, and 70% of girls become pregnant at the age of 21.
Oh, and then the cycle starts all over again, right?
By the way, half of these kids end up in jail. Half of the foster kids end up in jail. They're actually feeders for prison.
Yeah, and I've heard that stat too. There's a seven-year mm-hmm. difference between one institution to the next.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, excellent. Well, that's not excellent, but excellent for the work that you're doing, and I really appreciate it. And I will definitely have your information. I will help you get that film up on YouTube.
Thank you. Thank
that's
you,
something
Sarah.
I know I can do.
Thank you. And the only other thing I have to say is everyone needs to get involved. These kids need connections. If there's anything anybody can do, and if you want to change things, you have to do it by getting involved, because then you really get to the heart of the matter. But more important than anything else, all our young kids right now need connections more than ever.
I'd like to get that film up on Netflix. Maybe we should talk and see if there's
a
way we can
do it.
Let's get it up on Netflix and get something. And maybe you can make a little bit of money to go back into the needs of these children or whatever, to make another documentary or whatever you do, since you're such a kind hearted person to a good stuff. Let's see. So good. Well, thank you so much. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay. You too. Thanks, Sarah.
Walking on.